When you hear the title, The Voice, there really is only one name that comes to mind, or that should come to mind at least, Whitney Elizabeth Houston. By the late 2000s, Whitney's music career had all but fizzled as her personal life and struggles became more prevalent than her professional career. But in 2009, Whitney changed that and came back with her first album in 7 years, I Look To You. I Look To You was a complicated era, as while it was the first time Whitney was back to recording in years, it was painfully obvious that things were not like how they once were, at least in terms of vocal ability and performance stamina. But on the other hand, the album itself was great, and she sounded better than she had in years. This album is also significant for being Houston's final album before her tragic death in 2012. So tonight, let's take a look back into the era that was deemed as Houston's comeback, I Look To You. Welcome to Planet 2000s, a place where we celebrate pop music's most iconic moments from the most iconic decade in pop music history. Let's dive in. I Look To You was Whitney Houston's seventh studio album, released worldwide on August 28, 2009, and domestically, meaning North America, on August 31, 2009. The original release date for the album was actually September 1st, but it was moved up a day to the 31st, most likely due to the deadlines for Grammy submissions, even though I Look To You didn't even end up receiving any. The album was first conceived in 2007, not long after Whitney filed for divorce from her husband of 14 years, Bobby Brown. It's no secret that those two had a tumultuous marriage, but we won't go too much into that today, you guys. Enough books and movies have been made about the situation. Today we're going to talk about the triumphant moments of the I Look To You era, also the not-so-triumphant moments, but we will talk about that tour later, and we'll talk about R. Kelly as well. Whitney began recording the album in 2008, and Clive Davis actually himself confirmed that he would be working with Whitney on this comeback album on an episode of The Oprah Winfrey Show, and in February 2009, Whitney actually made an appearance at the famous Clive Davis pre-Grammy Gala, where she performed a four-song set to a crowd of very famous faces, such as Paul McCartney, Jimmy Fox, and Barry Manilow.
Clive and I are partners, and he is also someone who guides me. He still has that knack for knowing, for being able to hear with musical ears. He still loves music. He still loves lyric. He still loves melodies. He's probably one of the few people in the industry that still has that gift of knowing what song kind of fits with what voice. You know what I'm saying? With me, I think it comes easy for him. But this time it was a little more difficult. He knows when I've had enough.
Whitney has stated that this album was going to reflect on both her emotional state and personal events in her life since her last album 7 years prior, 2002's Just Whitney.
I would say it was a hard album to make. For me, coming through some you know, things of adversity and getting through it was the clincher for me. It just made me feel triumphant in a way, like I had the victory. I took a break. I needed that break. I needed time to raise my daughter, to make sure that my daughter understood that I just wasn't a performer or entertainer, that I was a mother. I was her mother, and that she could depend on me, and that I had to make sure that she was raised properly because that's how I was raised.
Clive Davis, whom had been at the forefront behind the scenes of Whitney's career, was instrumental in the inception and creation of this album. Clive had mentioned that the idea wasn't for Whitney to be chasing trends on what is popular in music, but rather to stay true to what and who Whitney was, as well as the impact she had on the industry as a whole. Whitney worked with producers and writers such as Alicia Keys, Deja, David Foster, Fernando Garibay, Harvey Mason Jr., Stargate, Tricky Stewart, Giorgio Twinfort, and Eric Hudson, where she actually had a beautiful story working with him.
Eric Hudson, who did Worth It, he grew up in my hometown. I know his mother, I know his father for years. And I remember this kid as a baby in East Orange, New Jersey. And here I am in the studio working with him. And I looked at him and I was like, where do I know you from? He says, you know, my mother, who wrote Holiday for Madonna. And I said, oh my God, you're that little boy who can play like Beethoven. who was just amazing. Amazing. With support of his mother and his father, I mean, he has done so well, and I'm so proud of him. And he wrote a great song.
And you really hear that amazing sound come out of Whitney on the song Worth It, so you can tell that she had a great time in the studio, and she felt that connection with Eric. Whitney also recorded a duet with Akon, who was on fire at that point.
When Clive told me I was going to be working with Akon, I thought, interesting. All right. But when I heard the song, I wanted a record like My Love Is Your Love with the island feel, you know what I'm saying? I wanted an island record, you know, because My Love Is Your Love was so huge and in its own, you know, it has its own fashion, you know, with Wyclef, that I wanted that feeling, but I didn't know, like, who was that person? And Clyde came, he said, Akon is the guy that we're going to work with. And I was like, okay. Akon, okay, I can deal with that. And then, like, when I went in the studio and I was asking him, like, you know, did your mother name you Akon? And he said, no, it means a convict. And I thought, oh, God, okay, all right, I think I can handle that. I can handle that. But it was very, he's a gentleman. He did his work very well. We did it very quickly and diligently, and I'm very proud of that record. I really am. I'm very proud of it. It's a great record.
So Whitney was excited, even though a little creeped out. And in the summer of 2009 edition of Wrap Up Magazine, R&B singer Akon spoke about working with Whitney for the then upcoming album. And in the interview, he revealed that he had worked with her on two songs for the album, one of which, Like I Never Left, was previously leaked to the internet, and it had initially been tipped as a single. Now, Clive said that Whitney wanted an island song, and Whitney as well said that, as you just heard. So they reached out to Akon, and a lot of people actually think the song Sounds Like My Baby by Janet Jackson, the song with He Who Shall Not Be Named, Kanye West. I actually do think it has a similar flair to it, but yeah, it has that island vibe. Akon was doing a lot of those songs. That was the Don't Matter, Nobody Wanna See Us Together era, you know? You hear it on Like I Never Left. This album was all about Whitney finding her confidence and strength in her voice again, and for all intents and purposes, I'd say that she achieved that to a certain degree. Was she able to sing like she used to? No, she couldn't, but she still sounded beautiful. And the songs on this album are amazing, solid R&B tracks. She worked hard, and while she may have made it seem like she was on the 7-year break to focus on motherhood, she really was still struggling, and we learned that in the Whitney documentary that came out that the family had produced. We learned that she was forced to record this album and leave rehab early because she had run out of money. It was a rough time for her, but she really did her best to pull it together.
I mean, that's what makes it, that makes it real. The changes that we go through, the transition that we go through, the tests that we go through, being a mother, becoming a single mother, it all had its ups and its downs. But for the most part, I kept my faith, and I kept my head up, and I took my time, and I had the blessing of watching my daughter grow from the time when 12, when a young woman is like at the age of 12 or 13, it's a detrimental years, you know, the 13, 14, 15, 16. And I had the opportunity to watch her grow and to be there for her. Before I started to say, okay, I'm going to go in the studio and do this album, and Clive called me, I said, just give me a minute, let me just get her straightened out and let me get her, you know, on the right track and let her know what I'm about to do, because she's going with me everywhere I go. She's going to be right here by my side. And when I told her I was going to, you know, embark upon a new album, she was so supportive and very much my friend.
There were two official singles chosen for the album, I Look to You and Million Dollar Bill. So let's get started with the first single. I Look to You was the first official single that was released from the album, and it got its release on July 23rd, 2009. It is a pop R&B ballad that is rooted in gospel. It was written by the now disgraced R&B singer R. Kelly and produced by Harvey Mason Jr. and Tricky Stewart. Here's what Whitney had to say at the time of the release of the single.
Your first single, I Look to You, was written by R. Kelly. Is it true that R. Kelly had that song for you for 10 years?
10 years.
Had you heard it before, or was the reason why you didn't record it before then?
I had not heard it. You know, when the shit came at Arista, when Clive left and L.A. came into the seat,
mm-hmm.
L.A. had the song, but L.A. never played it for me. I don't understand the reason why.
Mm-hmm.
But as it all turned around, when Clive came back, I went back with Clive. Clive got all the songs that were there at Arista that were his, that he held there. And this particular song, R. Kelly had been waiting to work with me for some time, but nobody's ever told me that.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been wanting to work with me for about a good 8, 9, 10 years, and finally we get around to it, you know, to do this song. But I think, you know, everything has a time and place, and it was just perfect for this time.
Now, this is one of two songs that R. Kelly wrote for the album, the other being Salute. It's interesting because at this point in 2009, it's not like the actions of Robert Kelly were a secret to anyone because, you know, there was that videotape, gross and disgusting. People kind of turned a blind eye, I'm sure you all know, and he was widely accepted still in music. It was not frowned upon to work with him. Like, it was actually very common. Whitney was on his side. Everyone was.
Were you concerned about having R. Kelly on your album at all?
Nope. I sure don't. People need to mind their business and stick to judging themselves, dealing with their own household, deal with having up in their house instead of everybody else's. You know what I'm saying? That's what they need to do. You know what I'm saying? I had no problem whatsoever. The man is gifted. The man's got an anointing, and God gave him a gift. And that's what we dealt with. We weren't dealing with all that other madness.
You're just dealing with the song and with the talent behind the song.
That's it. And I'm talking about a talented, gifted young man. I'm talking about somebody who can stand in 5 minutes and write a whole song in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about. And if anybody knows anything about Robert Kelly, then they know that he is capable of doing stuff like that.
He even recorded a song with Lady Gaga 4 years after this interview, after the I Look 2 album, and Lady Gaga performed with him. You know, wild. I am grateful that he is now obviously getting his time to be serving in jail. I don't know what the right terminology is. All I know is I'm happy he's out of here. It's crazy to see how things went back then. Originally, the Diane Warren penned track I Didn't Know My Own Strength was going to be released as the lead single from the album, as reported by Vibe magazine. However, after the 3 industry listening parties that Whitney held in LA, New York, and London, more on those later, I Look To You received a standing ovation from the crowd, therefore swaying Whitney and her team to release I Look To You as the single instead, and it ended up serving as the lead single in America and the second single worldwide. Million Dollar Bill was the lead single in the worldwide territories. They kind of just flipped them around. I Look To You is about looking to someone for strength when you need it in times of strife, likely written with Whitney's relationship with the Lord in mind. The song obviously takes on new meaning now that Whitney has passed, as she is now the source of strength for so many. Billboard magazine's Monica Herrera gave the song a very positive review, writing that Whitney is both vulnerable and in control. She adds that the minimalist production, which features a lone sullen piano and soft synths, exists purely to cushion Whitney's moving vocal performance. Lastly, she stated that it stands firmly in the tradition of her most emotive hits, Greatest Love of All, I Will Always Love You, and signals the long-awaited return of a true diva. That's a beautiful review. The song's video was directed by Melina Matsoukas, who at that point had directed music videos like Sweet Dreams by Beyoncé, Just Dance by Lady Gaga, and Closer by Neo, among others. So she was a hot director and in demand, honey. The video features Whitney in front of a beige and gray backdrop, sitting on a box with a spotlight on her as she sings a song. A shower of flowers falls towards her towards the end of the video. The intention behind the simple treatment was just to highlight her humble relationship with the Lord, and she's wearing a silky white dress, fitting the mood of the setting perfectly. Now, Whitney performed the track a few times during the promotional track for the album. She performed it on Good Morning America, on Wetten Das, which is a German television series, as well as the second annual BET Celebration of Gospel Gala, alongside Kim Burrell and a gospel choir. The song was a number one hit in Brazil, and it also reached number 14 on the US Hot Gospel Songs chart. It reached number 40 in Japan, number 68 in Canada, and number 70 on the US Billboard Hot 100, where it has reached a gold certification for sales of over 500,000 downloads. The second single from the album was the R&B disco dance bop Million Dollar Bill. The track was released on August 18th, 2009 and August 24th in the UK. It was the second US single and the first worldwide single, as I had said earlier. They kind of switched them around. The song is notable for being Whitney's final single released from an official studio album, along with the last song that was released in her lifetime before her tragic death in February 2012. The song was written by husband and wife duo Alicia Keys and Swizz Beatz.
About 2 years ago, Clive Davis gives his annual pre-Grammy party, and I've always enjoyed her music as an accomplished pianist. And I think women who play piano are extremely special. I've always thought that, like, Aretha Franklin was extremely gifted, Nina Simone extremely gifted, Roberta Flack extremely gifted people, and Alicia just affected me that way, and I wanted to meet her and talk with her. And then something occurred to me that she and I could make a record that would be probably outstanding, and I asked her, and I said, do you think you could produce a record with me? And she thought about it for a second. She said, yeah, I could do it. And Million Dollar Bill.
It also features a sample from Liliana Holloway's song We're Getting Stronger, with that song's writer Norman Harris earning a co-writing credit due to the usage of the sample. When Whitney was asked about the song and about working with Alicia, she had this to say.
At the show, one of your parties the year before last, I kind of looked at her, and it was when she had Everything's Gonna Be All Right record out, and it was the only record that came on the radio that inspired me. That you know, saying you know, that kind of thing, and it was like it made me feel good and happy. And I thought, God, you know, she's on the label, you know, with Papa here and Daddy here. And I thought, I got to get to know her. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to have camaraderie with some of the people that were on the label where I came back home to. And I thought, and I walked over to her just off the cuff, and I said, hey, do you think you can produce me? She said, yeah, I think I can. And we talked about how I felt and everything. And then I performed the year after, and she came up with a song, Million Dollar Bill. It's off right off the, you know, and I said, wow, incredible. And at that point in time, when I got into the studio with her and I heard the song, I was like, wow. I was like, wow. Now it's coming together. I feel it. I can feel it.
Oh, I love it. It just screams girl power. Swizz Beatz mentions how he got a call from Clive Davis and record executive Larry Jackson when it was time to choose songs for Whitney to record, in hopes that the beatmaker would have a track for the diva. And he did. The song received major praise during the listening parties, with attendees deeming it as having major comeback record potential. From the New York listening party, Rolling Stone magazine said the song is a clattering, up-tempo, hip-hop-inspired number. It may be the fastest ever for Whitney, who keeps up nicely. It received a standing ovation, setting the tone for much of the album. The music video was again directed by Melina Matsoukas and premiered on Whitney's official website on September 16th, 2009. Whitney is seen entering a dry cleaners, making her way through a kitchen, wearing a lavish fur coat, and once she exits the kitchen, the music begins and she walks into a nightclub, removing the coat to begin, you know, singing on a small stage. Bar lounge singer vibes, you know? Whitney also has different outfits through the video, so she's got a metallic dress with like the knee-high boots, she's got a pink dress, and she's got a full-length silver dress, and it's just glamour all the way. The video ends with Whitney walking away in the silver dress, and the dollar bills are just blowing around. The track performed moderately on the charts. It peaked at number one on the US Dance Club Songs chart, where Whitney has had previous number ones like I'm Every Woman and I Learned from the Best and It's Not Right But It's Okay, so she owns that chart. It reached number three in Belgium, number five in the UK, so it was a top 10 hit in Europe, so that's pretty amazing for Whitney. It reached number 62 in Canada and number 100 in the USA on the Billboard Hot 100.
Thank you guys for tuning in to the Planet 2000s podcast. I just wanted to take a moment to let you guys know where you can find me on social media. I am on Instagram at Planet2000s, or you can hit me up on my personal page at Michael Kadosh, C-A-D-O-C-H. If you guys want to talk about some good old pop music or just reminisce about some good times, then make sure to hit me up there. I'm also on Twitter or Facebook at Michael Kadosh. Back to the pod.
The album was hyped as Whitney's major comeback, what with it being her first studio album in 7 years and all. Also, her first work since her divorce from Bobby Brown, whom most of the general public had blamed up until that point for her downfall. The promotional track for the album began on July 14th, 2009, in London, England, where the singer held an official album listening party. A second listening party was held on July 21st, 2009, in New York City, and the guests included Alicia Keys, Diane Sawyer, Martha Stewart, and Vivica A. Fox, among others. Finally, a third listening party on July 23rd, 2009 was held in Los Angeles with Halle Berry, Jane Fonda, Stevie Wonder, Magic Johnson, Jackie Collins, Barry Manilow, Diane Warren, Penny Marshall, Brian McKnight, and David Foster, among those in attendance. Whitney earned a standing ovation in each of the cities, giving an immense amount of hype for the album. And aside from the listening parties, Whitney also had many high-profile performances, including one on Good Morning America, where the fans were loving her.
Fantabulous.
Soulful. Classic.
Phenomenal.
Most beautiful woman in the world that I have ever known and ever cherished.
The voice is back.
The voice is back.
The voice is definitely back.
Welcome back, Whitney.
Welcome back, Whitney.
We missed you. We missed you. I love you. I miss you. And I'm glad you're here.
So adorable. And the X Factor UK, the X Factor Italy, Dancing with the Stars, the American Music Awards, and the Oprah Winfrey Show. Now, that Oprah interview, you guys, where do we even begin with this interview? It seemed that at the time, it was the one everyone was waiting for. Her first sit-down TV interview since the infamous 2002 Crack Is Whack interview.
Had you gone to rehab?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long were you in rehab?
I did my stint. Mm-hmm. You know, you did your 30 days, you know. I went to one. Mm-hmm. Where I could take my child with me. Mm-hmm. Everywhere, I just had to have her. She was with me. I wanted her to understand. I didn't lie to her.
Really?
I couldn't.
You explained to her about the drugs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What did you say? How do you tell your child?
I kind of associated with our lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And what could happen.
Mm-hmm.
The Oprah interview turned into 2 one-hour specials featuring the most in-depth and personal interviews of both Whitney's and Oprah's careers, to be honest, and they were screened on September 14th and 15th, 2009, featuring the promised live performance of I Didn't Know My Own Strength, and Whitney called it the best interview she has ever done.
Was your mother saying you have to go to rehab, or was your mother saying you have to get out of this marriage?
You have to go to rehab and make a decision.
Make a decision.
With a clear mind.
Yeah.
Didn't know my own strength. There were so many times I wondered how I get through the night. I thought I took all that I could take. I didn't know.
Whitney sounded beautiful, and I'm happy that she had that triumphant moment in this era, you know, to really feel the love, because it was radiating off everybody who was watching at home and in that audience. Whitney touched on everything from her drug use to how she used those drugs in detail, her mentally abusive marriage to Bobby Brown, and so much more. You know, like I just played, you know, her triumphant performance of I Didn't Know My Own Strength, a moment that has since been considered one of the most prominent in her career. You know, it was highlighted in the 2022 cinematic film Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody, so it was considered a moment that stands out in her career. In addition to the numerous TV appearances Miss Houston took part in, she also performed a world tour titled Nothing But Love World Tour, and this was her first since 1999's My Love Is Your Love tour. In the end, this tour would also serve as her final tour before she died.
Yeah, I thought it was the best title for the tour. It describes how I feel about my audiences and what I wanted to exude, which was, I have nothing but love for you. So I thought it was perfect.
The tour spanned a total of 48 shows and saw Whitney visiting Europe, Oceania, and Asia, crossing over $36 million. The tour was announced on October 12, 2009 via her official website with the statement, "This is my first full tour since the My Love Is Your Love tour, and I am so excited to be performing for my fans around the world after all this time. I am putting together a great show and cannot wait to perform the songs from my new album, I Look to You, along with some of your favorites. I chose this title because what I had under any circumstance was love. I wouldn't have overcome tough times without my mom and my daughter. My daughter is especially like a friend who supported me and stayed with me at the studio when I was working on the album.
Right now I'm on salads and soup. Onion soup is an astringent
which means, I don't mean astringent here, it cleanses the body. It cleanses onions. So I do a lot of onion soup and asparagus. I have a throat comfort tea that I drink. There's certain things you have to maintain. And, you know, from back in the days when you were younger and you didn't know as much as you know now, you know, you did things that you just, you know, I had a lot of money, a lot of stuff, you know, married, kids, you know, just having a ball. And then you get older and you become wiser and you know that this is your job. This is something that you do, and people want to come and see you really do your gig.
Listen, guys, she was doing the best she could. The tour was financially successful. However, it was widely panned due to Whitney's struggling vocals. On the February 22nd opening night of her Australian tour, some fans reportedly walked out of the arena. It got so bad that the tour promoters had to actually issue a statement regarding Whitney's poor performance, saying it is what it is. She's comfortable with the show she's performing. She knows she's not hitting every note like she used to, but it's value for money. It's Whitney Houston, warts and all. For the most part, the critics were kind to Whitney and the album, with the majority of the outlets giving the album a positive review. Entertainment Weekly said that Houston's famous voice, which now sounds husky and glottal, as if her vocal cords were sent through a washer-dryer cycle with a handful of small rocks, brings a gravity that the album's often generically worded balance lack. Okay, maybe that wasn't the nicest review, but they meant to say something nice. People Magazine gave it 3 out of 4 stars, saying, come Grammy night, Houston will leave just as she came. Take that as you will. And the LA Times said that certain voices stand like monuments upon the landscape of 20th century pop, defining the architecture of their times, sheltering the dreams of millions, and inspiring the climbing careers of countless imitators. Whitney Houston owns one of those voices. I Look to You debuted at number 1 on the US Billboard 200 chart, with sales of over 305,000 copies in its first week, and this marked the best first week sales of her entire career. This also was the first time that Whitney hit number 1 with an album since The Bodyguard in 1992-1993. The album also reached number 1 in Canada, Germany, Italy, Poland, and Switzerland. It reached number 3 in the UK for a grand total of 2.5 million copies sold worldwide, with platinum certifications in the USA, Poland, Ireland, and Canada.
It means they want to hear someone sing. They want to hear someone who, for all the years I have been in the business, which is now going on 30 years, sing love to them. Not so much strip for them, take their clothes off for them, or, you know, do soft porn for them. They want to hear love. They want to feel love. They want to raise their daughters with an integrity and in dignity and a pride that doesn't require that. So I just thought that's what it was about. And I think I'm right.
Whitney was honored with many Lifetime Achievement Awards during this era to celebrate her comeback, including the International Artist Award at the American Music Awards, as well as the BET Honor for Entertainment at the BET Honors Ceremony in 2010. So you guys, thank you so much for listening, and I hope that you honor Whitney today by listening to the I Look To You album, her final album, an album that she really put her all into, and it kind of is the last chance that she got to sing, and she sounded beautiful. I hope you guys all have a lovely day, and I'll see you next time. Bye.